Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is a Thursday. We are live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on Fox Sports Radio and right here on FS1. 1 hour from now, NFL meat sandwich. If you bet football, if you play fantasy football, or you just love football, Greg Cosell in 1 hour. I think the smartest 10 minutes of football conversation we have all week. Frank Vogel, coach of the Lakers, in 30 minutes stops by. I told you I saw him at Walgreens earlier this year in L.A. How bizarre is that? The coach of the Lakers pulled his mask down. He's like, Coward? I'm like, Frank Vogel? You go to Walgreens too? Joy Taylor's joining me.
Frank Vogel gets special Lakers toothpaste.
I thought it was so random. I'm like, I'm in the whole city of Los Angeles, I'm in a Walgreens right next to the cable. We're the only two people in the store.
Well, I'm sure he's happy to be back in Walgreens buying toothpaste now.
Overjoyed. So it's great to have you in. So it's very interesting. This is a weekend of clarity in the NFL. There's a lot of big games. The pretenders. We saw Buffalo, Tennessee play the other night, and it's like, maybe Buffalo's a little bit of a pretender. Tennessee is absolutely legitimate. And we're going to see Green Bay and Tampa Bay and all these games this weekend and Cleveland and Baltimore. You know, it's very funny. The Dallas Cowboys play Arizona. The schedule gets pretty weak for them right now. Very winnable games. And the feeling is Dak is gone and Andy Dalton's in. I want to remind you that what your replacements do will often define you when you don't go to work. So when Drew Brees got hurt last year, Teddy Bridgewater came in, went 5-0. What did it do? It got Teddy Bridgewater a franchise quarterback contract. And it also affirmed that Drew Brees and Teddy Bridgewater, it's not much of a gap. And it turned out that Teddy's now winning, and Drew's not winning anymore in New Orleans with a better roster. When Cam Newton missed the Kansas City game this year, didn't play. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God. That's a bad football team without Cam Newton. So Brees not playing probably hurt his status. Cam not playing totally elevated his status. So what will it do for Dak Prescott? The feeling is Andy Dalton. You know, we've seen this act before. It's not very good. Put this old dude to rest. This is, you know, he'll play a couple games. And in fact, Patrick Peterson, Arizona, great player, saying, hey, man, we just want to force this cat to throw the ball this weekend.
Stop the run. Definitely got to stop the run and force, not saying that he can't do it, but, you know, we have to force Andy Dalton to beat us. We feel if you take the ball out of Elliott's hands, there's more opportunities for bad things to happen when the ball is in the air.
That's interesting. If I asked you, I'm going to throw this out there. Dak and Dalton, which one has had the season with the most touchdown passes? Well, that would be obvious. That would be Andy Dalton, 33, in dysfunctional Cincinnati with a defensive coach. All right, which guy has had the most back-to-back double-digit win seasons? Well, that would be, well, Dak's never had that. That would be Andy Dalton, 4 seasons in a row. And by the way, he was in a division with Pittsburgh, always competent, and Baltimore, usually competent. Did everybody know that Andy Dalton's 32? No major history of injuries. He chose Texas because he's from there. He's from Katy, Texas. Andy Dalton's not a stiff. You watched last week, right? You watched that last drive, and you're like, your expectations of Andy Dalton are so low. And all of a sudden, you watch that drive, and it's like, I'm not saying he's as mobile as Dak, but you watch the tape. Look at the film. Look at these throws. That's a big boy NFL throw. Watch this throw. Seems to me that's a big boy NFL throw. He's 32. The Cowboys' schedule now is the weakest in the league for the next few weeks. Arizona, then it's Washington, beat up Philadelphia, face Pittsburgh, then they get a bye. But then it's a lot of Washington and Cincinnati and 49ers can't get their act together and home against Philadelphia and close the season out. Andy Dalton, when he was in Cincinnati, equally dysfunctional to Dallas, with a defensive coach, a conservative coach. We call Mike McCarthy a conservative coach. But when Andy was in that division 6-7 years ago and they had a bunch of weapons, he wasn't asked to carry the franchise. He was asked to be a distributor. He kept winning the division. So Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Brees not playing didn't do him any favors. Helped Teddy Bridgewater. Cam not playing did him huge favors. I just want to remind you, the first 4 years in the NFL, Dak and Andy Dalton, we threw the numbers out. It's the same dude. Now, I think I'd take Dak over Dalton. And I've, over the years, been much tougher on Dalton than Dak because they called him the Red Rifle. And I'm like, he doesn't deserve a nickname. Let's get off the Red Rifle nonsense. But the idea there's this massive gap, there really isn't. Dalton was drafted higher. Dalton had a very productive college career. Dalton has had more double-digit win seasons. Dalton's had the more touchdown passes in one season. And he is a distributor. He's a distributor, and this team is built, frankly, for somebody who's a distributor. So it's interesting. Arizona's takeaway this weekend is just force Andy Dalton to throw. That's actually, when he had good weapons, the best thing he did and the hardest way to beat him. All right, so Alabama coach Nick Saban is going to miss the game this weekend against Georgia. It's by far and away the best game of the weekend. It's probably going to be the best college football game this season. It's really, really good, right? It's going to be on a short list of great games. So Nick Saban's got COVID. He came out and he said, listen, protect. We don't know how we got it. We wear masks. We socially distance. He was very responsible, but they got it. Here's what's remarkable. The average NFL star player is not worth a point. The average college football player is not worth half a point. Nick Saban, by just not being in the stadium Saturday, it changed the line 2.5 points. Now, I want you to think about this. The assistant that will take it over is Steve Sarkisian. He has coached 2 major programs, has a winning record, has won bowl games. Alabama's also had the same system in for 10, 12 years. This is not a new system. And because he can't be there just for the game, it almost changes it by a field goal. The gap between Nick Saban now and the second best college coach, and I'll get to that in a second. I mean, he's literally, would this happen with any other coach? He had Zoom meetings this week. He was coaching them this week on Zoom. The system's installed. Sark's been there for years. This is unbelievable that it's almost a field goal difference. And it's funny. One of the things I always liked about Saban, there's a sense that he's rigid. But the truth is, he's really not. He's evolved his offense every year. Every year. He's made the life for his student athletes really amazing. They really support their kids academically. They support them emotionally. I was talking to a therapist yesterday about this in football. Saban offers layers and layers and layers of therapists, life coach, life strategists. Alabama football players go into very productive lives. He's never had an NCAA violation of note. Very few of his kids get into trouble. He's lost 12 coordinators. That's what I counted this morning. Now think about that. When Pete Carroll and Mack Brown at USC and Texas, legendary programs, when they started losing coordinators, the programs were never the same. Urban Meyer's an amazing coach. When he lost Charlie Strong, and I think like a Dan Mullen, Florida never felt the same. Nick Saban's lost 12 coordinators. Hasn't missed a beat. No NCAA stuff. Mostly good kids go on to productive lives. He keeps evolving offensively. He's just missing the game this week. Just the game. He's there on Zoom meetings. The offense is installed. And the Fox bet, those guys are like, oh, it's like 3 points. That's 2.5 points. The only coach in my lifetime that really is close to him, and this is somebody I have a lot of respect for because I know Nick and I like Nick a lot, is Tom Osborne. His last 5 years at Nebraska, he went 60-3. And his last year, 13-0, walk-off, one of the great teams of all time. He's, to me, the second best coach in the history of college football. And one of the reasons is, like Nick Saban, he really evolved. Woody Hayes became kind of a relic. Joe Pa was kind of a relic. Some of these guys, like, you know, and people I like Bobby Bowden, they're not really running the program. you know, they show up and sign five or six kids. They show up to the house. Mom and dad like them. But the coordinators are running the offense. The coordinators are running recruiting. The coordinators are running the program. Nick Saban is like 66 years old because he's just not going to be at the game. Changes the spread significantly. It's like this guy is just separated. I mean, to me, it's Saban, it's Osborne, probably Bear Bryant, and then you can argue over the last one. But I was shocked, but he has a head coach as an assistant who has won bowl games and won at two programs. He's got a defensive system that's been in forever. He's also not only lost coordinators, they often go get jobs in his conference, take all his secrets, and coach against him. And they're still there. I mean, can you imagine? You work at a company, it could be Coke. You lose many executives. They go over to the other place. They go up against you. They know all your trade secrets at Pepsi. You'd be a struggle, right? Like, oh my gosh, Nick's coaching against his former assistants every other weekend. No dip in the quality of the program. It really is remarkable. I've watched these great programs: Florida, Texas, USC, Nebraska. They lose a top coordinator or two, and the program just goes down. He's lost 11 or 12. I lost count this morning. I think he's had seven offensive coordinators. And he's coaching against Lane. And he's coaching against Kirby Smart. And he's coaching against the kid at Tennessee. Every weekend he faces somebody that has all his trade secrets. It's remarkable. Wish Coach well.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I do Super Bowl bubbles, and I usually wait for about a month to watch it. And my Super Bowl bubble, I always believe there's eight teams good enough to get to a conference championship. And if you're good enough to get to a conference championship, then you're good enough to win. So four teams get to a conference championship. And I think there's eight teams at any one point in an NFL season after the first month. And then there's always two or three that are close but not quite there. They miss a component. So this is my first Super Bowl bubble of the year. Here it is. This is official. The Rams, Bills, and Saints are close. In fact, the Rams and the Bills played to the last play of a game. In the AFC, it's New England with Cam, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Kansas City. And it just so happens in the NFC, it's Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and the Packers, and the Seattle Seahawks. I will say this morning, Green Bay to me feels like the best team in America and the least flawed team. And there's a reason for it. There's three stats that are very important, and Green Bay is really good at all of them. Number one, Green Bay leads the NFL in yards per play, almost 7 yards a play. What does that mean? They're explosive. They can get cheaper touchdowns, free touchdowns. They make things happen. Number two is third down conversion rate. They're top five in the NFL. What does that mean? Generally means you have a good offensive line, you get a push on third and short, you have a veteran quarterback who can audible in and out of trouble. They have Aaron Rodgers. And the third thing is what they call sack differential. They're top three in the NFL, meaning they get to your quarterback and you don't get to theirs. So those are three stats. They're very good. I do not believe they have a hole. I do worry about Devontae Adams' health, but every other team has a hole. Seattle and Tennessee in my bubble, neither has a pass rush. Let's be honest about Tampa Bay. There's some mobility issues with the quarterback they have, and their discipline is frighteningly bad at times with Tampa. New England, no deep threat. It tends to be kind of run-centric. Baltimore doesn't play well from behind, and Pittsburgh keeps beating bad teams and letting them stick around. Kansas City, why do they keep falling behind? It's almost as if psychologically Kansas City feels like, yeah, Patrick will save us. You can't keep falling behind by 10 and 14 points. That's just not the way it works. You can't do it in this league. You're going to end up facing with your defense and offense that just keeps the ball away and you lose games. So I think we have a best team in the NFL, Green Bay. I think we have close. Cleveland, Pittsburgh plays this weekend. If Cleveland wins, then I think I would get them closer to the bubble. But it's New England, Baltimore, Kansas City, Pittsburgh. And I've got some reservations on Pittsburgh, but I trust them right now defensively more than I do Buffalo's defense and LA's defense. And I think they're more explosive offensively, potentially, than New Orleans' offense. So my eight are New England, Baltimore, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, Tennessee, Seattle, and the Green Bay Packers. Yes, I put Tennessee in there. After they bludgeon Buffalo, what am I supposed to not be impressed by? They're doing everything well. They don't have a pass rush, but they do everything else really well.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I have this theory that it's always the third thing that makes you leave a relationship or a restaurant or a town. I'll give you an example. Los Angeles is very expensive, and the traffic is not good. But the food's great, and the weather's great, and there's a ton to do. So a lot of people stay here. New York was interesting. With COVID, New York's had a lot of people leave. Why? Because it's really expensive, it's really crowded, and when you couldn't go to the cool stuff that New York offers and they shut it all down, weather ain't great. You get to it's a third thing, like a restaurant. I'll go and think it's a little expensive, the food's a little fatty. But unless the service is lousy, I'm going if it tastes great. So the third thing in a relationship, you know, he doesn't make any money, and he doesn't shower regularly. You could live with that. But if he's a jerk, then she dumps you. So don't be a third. This is the Jimmy Garoppolo thing. Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco. So Jimmy Garoppolo has a judgment issue. Adult film star, franchise quarterback, not good enough. John Lynch was pissed. So was his coach. He's got a judgment issue. Makes some bad throws, judgment. Also, he kind of can be inconsistent. Week to week, half to half. Here's another problem now, and this is why I think he's in trouble. It's not missing the receiver in the Super Bowl. Folks, he's hurt again. And Kyle Shanahan said yesterday, we would bench him again if he's hurt. In his division, Jared Goff got the crap beat out of him for 3 years at Cal. He got the crap beat out of him when Jeff Fisher was the coach. Jared Goff's taken a lot of hits, never missed a start. Russell Wilson, college pro, never missed a start. Kyler Murray, college pro, never missed a start. I looked it up this morning. Jimmy Garoppolo now has missed 17 starts. It's that third thing, the judgment. That's why I always say, don't give teams Baker Mayfield, Johnny Manziel, Jameis Winston. Don't give them bad judgment, because that you come into a room and they got a mark. Because as a young quarterback, you're going to be inconsistent. So you're up to two. You give them a third, they're out. Like Baker, Jameis, and Johnny came in with judgment issues. You've got to check. That's like going into a relationship and she knows the people you've dated and she knows he's occasionally a jerk. You got to check against you in the relationship. You haven't even gone out on a date yet. So Garoppolo, his judgment flawed. That was a really bad situation as a Niner quarterback, a superstar potentially in the league, going out with an adult film star. I'm not judgmental. I'm not a moralist. Anybody else, fine. Not my franchise quarterback. Then we've seen inconsistency in his play. Okay, he's young. Yeah. He's missed 17 starts. Last week, they took him out. He can't play. Like, you're getting to a point where, and that's why Carson Wentz has a longer runway. You know, Carson Wentz has been inconsistent, and he's got some injuries. But I can't think of a third. They like him. He works hard. He's got the arm, the talent. So this is the situation for Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo. You're starting to get me into a third check. And that's just the way it's always worked. I've always been like with friends. I can be okay if you're occasionally. I'm Doug Gottlieb's friend. He's always late. He's late every time. So there's a check against him. Two more, he's done. He's already got a check. He's late for everything. You invite Doug over at 7 at 7:45. I just now lie. Show up at 6. He gets there at 7:15 where everybody else is there. But you get to that third check mark, that's when you leave cities. I left Connecticut. Winter's awful. Most boring state in the world. Nice people. Most boring state in the world. And at the end, I didn't love the workplace. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, I'm out. Right? So if L.A. starts being 19 degrees, I'm out of here. Because the weather and the food and the people are keeping me. Expense? Traffic, not great.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Greg Cosell has been working for 41 years at NFL Films. You bet football, you're a fantasy football player. There's nobody like him. We call it our NFL meat sandwich, and he is joining me now live. So let's go to... I said earlier today that Green Bay feels like the least flawed team I've seen. I like Seattle and Tennessee, but they have no pass rush. Pittsburgh is beating bad teams and letting them hang around. You know, I like Kansas City, but could you stop falling behind by double digits on a regular basis? But I look at them. Baltimore appears to play better with a lead than from behind. And then I look at Green Bay and I'm like, they're good on third down, 6.8 yards a play, the sack differential. You can't get to their quarterback. They get to yours. But we all pay attention to LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, and we should. But
no
I look
question.
At but when you look at the tape of them, do they have a flaw? Because I can't see it yet with Green Bay.
Well, you know what's really interesting, Colin, and by the way, nice facial hair.
Thank you.
But what's really interesting about Green Bay is they do not play very much man-to-man coverage. And in today's NFL, you always think that, hey, you have to be able to play man coverage in this league to be really, really good on defense. And they don't. It's not necessarily a flaw. It's just something that I find fascinating when I watch them. And it's obviously a choice made by Mike Pettine. He's got two corners in and Alexander and King, who I think can line up and play man, but they just don't do a lot of that. So it'll be interesting. But offensively, they're fascinating now because the Matt LaFleur influence is clearly present in the motion, in the play action pass game. This is now Matt LaFleur's offense that Aaron Rodgers is executing at a very high level. And if you notice through the first four games, because they've had a bye, so they're 4-0, you don't see Rodgers running around as much. There have not been as many improvisational Rodgers plays. There have been far more pocket throws.
Here's a team that's good, but there's something that doesn't quite work, and it's Pittsburgh. I know they run to the ball. They're very athletic defensively, but they don't average much yard per play. They let bad teams hang around. Tomlin's a veteran, Big Ben's good, the defense, so they are one of those teams that they could win playoff games. I don't doubt that. But there's something missing for me, and you look at the film on the Steelers. What's missing that I just don't feel?
Well, I think that their corners have been a little up and down this year, Hayden and Steven Nelson. I think they've had good moments, but also some bad snaps. The pass game's been interesting. They've got a ton of weapons, and at times you'll see schemed plays like the game-sealing touchdown to Claypool this past week was a clearly schemed play based on what they had gotten throughout the game against the Eagles. But they've not really been explosive as a passing team this year, given their weapons. I think that's the next step for their offense. And maybe they're just sort of working that in as the season progresses. Obviously, it was a different kind of offseason and training camp, but it's not an offense that has really been explosive. And I think they have the people to do that.
So they play Cleveland this week. I think Stefanski, it's so funny. Last week, first half, I thought Baker played an exquisite half of football. Second half, he reverted to some Baker stuff. What was the difference between the first half and second half on what they were calling?
I think quite honestly, and again, you know me, I don't do hot controversial takes, Colin. I say what I see on film. I quite honestly don't believe Baker Mayfield has played that well. They're 4-1, and their run game has been really good, and Stefanski has great concepts in the pass game that are executed really well. But I think Baker is playing a little fast, both mentally and physically. I think he needs to slow down his entire process. He overstrides at times because he plays so fast, and he throws those high fastballs. He's a very talented kid. I think he's got a really good arm. We've seen him be exceedingly accurate throughout his career at times. But I think that for them to get to where they believe I'm sure they can get to, he's going to have to play a lot better than he's playing now.
So it's funny about Andy Dalton. First 4 years in the league, he and Dak's numbers, I mean, they just mirror each other. They really do. It's interesting. And I think there's this sense now that, well, let's taper the offense down a little. But the truth is, Andy, when he had weapons, he's not going to carry a team. But when he had weapons in Cincinnati, he was very efficient, and he can make most of the throws. And I watched that. Yeah. I watched that last drive last week, and I thought, oh, this is a franchise quarterback. This is not. He's only 32, Greg. There's a lot of throws in this arm. Will the offense, in your opinion, change dramatically with Dalton instead of Dak?
Well, to me, they have to make a decision as to how they want to play based on their defense, Colin. Their defense has not been very good, and it gives up a lot of points. So normally, when your defense is like that, you try to at least to some degree limit the number of plays that it's on the field. And you do that by running the ball. And it's not as if they don't have a good back or can't run the ball. Now, Dak is a really good quarterback, and he put up huge numbers. I had a coach tell me that in this offense that Andy Dalton could essentially do what Dak does. Now, whether that turns out to be numbers, that's not the point. The point is, can he run the offense efficiently? And I believe he can. Clearly, they have weapons, and they have a great back who my sense is they need to lean on a little more, not because of Dalton, but because of their defense.
Well, mate, Cowboy fans, pretty optimistic for Cowboy fans listening to our show. So one of the surprises of the weekend for me was how Washington so easily dismantled, how the Rams so easily dismantled Washington. Goff mostly had good pressure. This is a very capable defensive front for the Washington football team. And I came out of that game and I thought, they're going to go east again. They're going to get pushed around up front. Goff's going to be pressured. And I, after that game, I'm like, I think maybe I'm underselling the Rams a little bit. They've done something offensively. I don't know. It just feels like maybe there's the Gurley situation's gone. There something is working this year that I didn't see last year. Are they healthier? Is it schematic? But they are more forceful, it feels like to me, point of attack this year.
Well, I think you're seeing a young coach continue to develop with his scheme. Every coach has basic concepts and schemes that they use because coaches coach what they know. But then you build upon those, you expand those. And I think you're seeing a young coach doing that. McVay is one of those coaches who is just kind of a lunatic in a good way. He loves this stuff. He works at it. You're seeing an expansion of basic principles. How they get to those principles at times is different. They had a play this week that's very reflective of that when Gerald Everett lined up as an I formation fullback and ran a route and ended up catching it for 40 yards. So they're just taking their basic concepts and adding and tweaking and expanding. And I think offensively, they're one of the most overlooked teams in the league because people have this narrative about Jared Goff that he's not a great player. And there is a programmed element at times to his game, no question. But they're doing more things, and Goff happens to be a very good thrower.
Yeah. No, there's no question. I always felt there's a Matt Ryan quality to him, some limitations, but I think he throws a beautiful deep ball. And when he's in a rhythm, he and Russell Wilson throw two of the prettiest deep balls in the league. It's just a soft, catchable ball that always seems to get the guy in stride. So here's an interesting, first impressions are really important. So my first impression of Ryan Tannehill in Miami is he's okay. He's kind of athletic. He's okay. Okay. Then he goes to this staff. And in his last 17 games, his numbers look a lot like Lamar Jackson's last 17. And I'm not saying he's that quarterback. But is it possible that he was miscast in Miami, and with this staff, he's a very capable player?
Well, he wasn't bad in Miami. There's the sense that he was bad. And by the way, he's a better thrower than Lamar Jackson. But he's a talented kid, and I think it's a case of a really good mix between scheme and player, because they're an offense that starts with Derrick Henry in terms of what they do, both from a personnel standpoint and a formation standpoint. A lot of two tight ends, sometimes three tight ends. When everybody's healthy, they play with a fullback at times. So play action is a major part of what they do. And then you add in the fact that he's got movement ability, both by design with the play action boot game and the ability to make second reaction plays. And one other point, which is often overlooked when people talk about quarterbacks, he's been very accurate. His ball placement has been consistently precise, as we see watching these highlights. And He, to me, is a really solid quarterback in a really good system.
Worried about Josh Allen after that game Tuesday? Anything you see that bothered you?
Well, I'm not worried about him personally. He's been phenomenal against man coverage this year. And in that game, the Titans played over 75% zone. And I think you're seeing that to some degree with Patrick Mahomes as well. You're making these quarterbacks have to read it out and throw through tighter windows. They're certainly capable of doing it. But even Mahomes has been leaving the pocket prematurely. I think for Josh Allen, and I said, I don't think watching the tape, he had a bad game. But I think you're just making these guys have to go through the process a little longer. And sometimes they don't want to go through the process and they know they can move. So they move.
Yeah.
And they'll make some great plays. We know Mahomes can do that and Allen can do it too. But it just they have to go through the process differently versus zone than versus man, where versus man, you pretty much say, hey, I know it's man and here's the guy I want to throw to. Here's the matchup I like.
Yeah. Raiders slowed down Mahomes enough. It was the upset of the weekend. On the film, what jumped out to you in the Raiders' upset of the Chiefs?
Great zone coverage, great eye discipline, a particular concept against Kelce when he was the single receiver to the boundary that was really, really effective because they played zone to the three receiver side and matched up to Kelce with a corner on the single receiver side. So some really good concepts. I thought they played with great eye discipline. That's what you must do. It's eye discipline and leverage in your zone concepts when you play against the Chiefs. You can't play man. They have too much speed. So you play zone. And it all comes down to discipline and leverage and assignment football. But there's been three games this year in which Mahomes has not quite been Mahomes. Now, he's always going to throw for a lot of yards, Colin. But the Chargers, the Patriots, and the Raiders played a lot of zone coverage, and he was not as comfortable, and he starts to move when he doesn't need to. And as I said, he'll make plays. He's the most special quarterback in the league talent-wise. But ultimately, if you can get him out of his structure, then you feel you have a better chance.
Okay, finally, Derek Carr. And I've said this before to you and others, is that, you know, there's a sense that Derek Carr, I think he's like a little more athletic. He kind of reminds me of Kirk Cousins. They're a little reluctant sometimes in
big,
reluctant. Yeah. But I think Derek's a good athlete. I think he throws a pretty ball. He's got a little. I said he reminds me a little of Tony Romo. He's got a little ability to move with his feet and get out of coverage. So, what did you see from Derek Carr, the often criticized quarterback?
Another case where I think the scheme is really helping him now that he's been in Gruden's system for a number of years. Gruden does a great, great job with his use of personnel, his formations. You know, Gruden loves what we call the illusion of complexity. It's a lot of personnel, a lot of formations to get to basic concepts. And I think Carr is getting more comfortable. He's not a turn a loose guy. You have to define it for him. And I think he's feeling much more comfortable within that system. And, you know, we can get to our big play of the week now because it was from last week against the Chiefs, and it was a great example. They got a blitz. So let's go to the play and show it. And by the way, it's a rejuvenation here of Nelson Aguilar. But here you see a blitz with Damian Wilson and Ben Neiman. They're going to blitz. So now what happens here is in blitz coverage, you see the two safeties, Thornhill and Matthew. They're going to match up. It's kind of a zone match situation. And Aguilar is going to run the deep post. So what happens here is Matthew does not have him man-to-man the way you think of man-to-man, but it's a zone match based on the routes. So what happens is Matthew matches up to Aguilar. And you can see on the other side, you're going to get Thornhill. He's going to match up to Darren Waller running the crosser. Again, it's a zone match. He's not in a pure man situation, but you have to match up to routes. And Aguilar just beats Matthew vertically, and it's a great throw, but here's a defined throw, and that's a great example of how you set it up. You know what you're going to get defensively, and you know how Steve Spagnuolo plays it, and you get a big play.
Yeah. Nelson Aguilar had some drop issues in Philadelphia, but he's certainly talented. He can run. He's got a catch radius. He can make plays. There's no question. Greg Cosell, absolute pleasure. We all got smarter. Good seeing you.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
It is pretty amazing. My next guest is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's been in the NFL for 10 years. He's been a Pro Bowler for half of them. Never missed a game. He's like Tony Gonzalez on the defensive side. He just doesn't miss games. And he's a real team leader. There's a lot of good defensive players in the NFL. There's not dozens of great defensive leaders. And Cameron Jordan, the Saints defensive end, is absolutely one of those. They have a bye week this week, which is actually for players. It's a little bit of a break. You don't get many of those. And Cam Jordan is now joining us. So, you know, it is interesting that there are great defensive players. But when we think NFL, Cam, quarterback's a leader. Coach is the leader. But when I think of you, I'm like, no, you're a vocal guy. You're a verbal guy. Is a defensive leader, do you ever feel like you're the Drew Brees on the defensive side and that your words matter, they're impactful, and you're a mentor to a lot of players?
I look at myself definitely not in the category of Drew Brees in any sort of fashion, just because, you know, that focal point of a quarterback, he handles all checks, he handles energy, he handles everything. Everything that Drew does sets him apart. I think that, if anything, I just make sure to bring the energy. And, you know, I've got guys like Demario Davis, who, of course, is an all-pro right behind me, and play the way he does. And, you know, I let him be the quarterback of the situation. I just want to bring juice every play and every time I touch the field. It's that love of the game that, you know, I hope to never lose love for.
Well, it's interesting because you say you want to bring juice. For the first time in your life, you're playing with no fans. How do you create the juice when you're playing in an empty stadium?
I'll say, now we got the manufactured sound, right? We've got the 70 decibels of low music. At that point, it's us. It's really, we really take it back to the, if we had to play at midnight in the middle of the park, you know, in the back alley, we play football against anybody. And it's that same mentality that we take everywhere we go with this now. It's sort of chilling to be in the Superdome and not have the fans behind you, not have, you know, 70,000 people cheering, you know, who that going to beat them Saints. And at the same time, you know, we still have a job and a mission to complete. So we got to take that in our mindset and create our own energy. And our, you know, we can't have juice. We got to have more.
You know, it's interesting. So I've never been a fan of NFL preseason. I don't want my star players just go to Bahamas, go on vacation, show up Labor Day. But I was watching a game the other day with my wife, and my wife's like, man, there's a lot of guys hurt this year. And for the first time in my life, I was like, maybe they need preseason. Maybe they need to bang into each other for about, you know, four quarters. So now that you've played your career with 9 preseasons and 1 without, Cam, do you think there is value in the preseason? Should we shorten it? How do you view it now?
I don't know. I haven't played much preseason, honestly, ever. I think I've played is 2, maybe 3 preseason games. I normally play like 1.5. But I definitely think, you know, the COVID impact of it all has changed how guys were able to work out and get after it. You talk about, you know, COVID really hit America somewhere in March, and guys start training, you know, March, April, May, June. You hit training camp, and it was like, you know, you were taken out of most people's comparative norm situation on how to work out, how to stay, how to keep in shape, how to go about being football ready. And, you know, I think it's sort of shown just in terms of how guys may not have had the same access to treatments, rehabs, and abilities to be on their normal schedule, how to prepare for a season.
You know, you are in a division now with some veterans, Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Brees and Matt Ryan. You faced a lot of veteran quarterbacks. Generally, for a guy like you, you're licking your chops if you get a rookie quarterback. But Justin Herbert, Cam, there's something to it, man. He's got a whip. Kind of your impressions on what you saw from a kid who, in his third or fourth NFL start on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, he's talented. I like to say, you know, we hit him, 17, 18, 19 times?
Yeah.
And he was still out there rolling, taking hits, and slinging the rock. He's looking special. I think he could develop into a special quarterback in years to come. I sort of, you know, talked to him after the game. I was like, you might be the slowest, you know, quarterback out of Oregon. That's not saying much because you're still running like a 4.65, you know?
Yeah, no, he is. I'm watching some of the tape here. He's got an arm on him, that's for sure. When you look, a lot of people have said it's kind of Drew Brees. Many people believe it's Drew Brees' last year. I mean, he's going to have broadcasting options, as you are, if you want him. He's going to be able to do that. Does it feel like to you with Drew, does it feel like kind of a special year this year, knowing one of the great quarterbacks, top 10 quarterbacks of all time, this may be it. You may be playing in his last year.
Top one. Yeah, I'd say he's, you know, one of the top one quarterbacks if I had to go in my mindset of great quarterbacks, Drew Brees and Drew Brees. That being said, I don't know if it's last year. You know, when you talk about his completion rate, you talk about, you know, everything that he does. His what quarterback passing rate is probably over 100. Completion rate right now is probably sitting at what 70% plus. Everything that Drew does is elite. So when he decides to hang him up, he's going to go right into Canton. But in terms of, is this year special because it may be his last? I have no idea. I've never had to worry about playing without Drew Brees, so I won't start worrying about it now.
Yeah. So you average, you know, you get a 10 to 15 sacks every year. And, you know, and you're one of the guys in the NFL that's a reliable sacker, a one a game. And when you get into this, we are now in a more offensive league. The teams pass more than ever. I would imagine.
Unless they play defense.
Well, I would think, this can create more sacks for you. The current NFL is more spread out. It's faster. It's no huddle. It's more passing. As a defensive player, do you think it now plays into your skill set and into your strengths?
You know, as far as what we catch, you know, what we see now, we had the Tom Brady, we had Aaron Rodgers. It's, you know, the fast, quick release off the first read, if not check down, you know, type offenses. This is something that we're dealing with, that guys aren't hitting those, you know, 8-9 yard drops of old. Now it's like a 5 yard drop where they start in the shotgun, and then it's a two step and release. That, you know, it's hard pressed to sort of take away a quarterback's first read now. And you got receivers that are overly athletic and can go win these 50-50 balls. At this point, it's sort of becoming a hassle when you know that you could get to the quarterback, but they have such a fast release, it sometimes does not affect them at all.
So you play,
and now you can hide them behind play actions and boots, etc.
Yeah, so you play behind you play Teddy Bridgewater in about 10 days, 2 weeks, and then you play Brady after that. Have you ever faced Brady before? Week
Teddy
one.
Bridge?
That's right.
Yeah, I'll say.
That you faced the old man week one. So
we've already started our one. Started off 1-0.
So let me ask you. You face Tom Brady. Give me your thoughts on, did you sense age? How was Brady different than facing a Justin Herbert, facing a Teddy Bridgewater, facing guys you faced? What was it like? Because most believe Brady's the best of all time. Does he manipulate the line of scrimmage? I mean, what is it like to face Brady as the leading sacker on a football team?
I'll say our lead sacker is Trey Henderson. He's got like 4.5 sacks in 5 games right now. He's been rolling, coming off this edge hot. I try to tell him, like, take advantage of all opportunities. If I'm catching a double and you're catching a single, win your singles, and he's winning them at a high rate. Shout out to Trey Henderson. But when you talk about Tom Brady and what he's able to do, I mean, there's absolutely no noise. They came into the Superdome with zero fans. Like, we, you know, on a normal season, we expect 70,000. That changes everything up right there. But his ability to audible at the line, his ability to control his offense, and also have the weapons of, you know, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and, you know, at the time, Leonard Fournette, and I mean, they're sort of stacked back there. Also with McCoy, all the weapons that he had, and then Gronkowski, of course, you know, conch shell Gronk comes out of it, and he has all these available options, and I think he used them well. So the second time around, without saying too much, I'm sort of excited to play him again.
Yeah. By the way, you've got a new podcast with Mark Ingram called Trust Levels. Trust Levels, that is the new podcast with Mark Ingram, your former teammate, by the way.
Yeah, that's my brother. For former teammate, like, you know, we got drafted together in 2011. I was sleeping on his couch the first, like, couple weeks in New Orleans till I found a place of my own, because he was already training there in the offseason. him coming from Bama, you know, he had trained in New Orleans offseason, then get drafted by New Orleans. I come to New Orleans and it's a lockout year. So I'm like, you know, we really don't have too much contact with the Saints. It was an instant bond there. You know, that's been my dog and turned into a real life brother for me. So it just made most sense. It was like, you know, we're going to get on this podcast. I was like, who better to do it than with my guy who not only brings the juice on offense, who is a amazing, you know, running back, Pro Bowl caliber running back, and also backs up everything that he says and what he does on the field. And he's an even better dad and person off the field. So it was just a no-brainer. We started at the trust levels, big trust levels, and you know, we've released four episodes, and we're gonna keep on pushing. I mean, there's a lot of talent and a lot of fun being had, from our first guest from AK to, you know, this week's guest being Bobby Wagner. It's like we're just chilling with all our friends. It's like, what are we doing here, Colin?
Well, you know, we were talking during the break that you're lucky. I mean, you're obviously talented, but the Saints are well run. And I've had guys like TJ Hushmanzada come on my show, and his career, it was Cincinnati. They were sharing cups, and not the kind you drink out of. So have you ever thought to yourself, do you like when you were going through COVID? Do you ever sometimes kind of knock on wood and think to yourself, man, I landed in a good spot?
100%. You know, if anybody ever talks to my agent, he'll tell you, like, all I prayed for was somewhere warm. And I ended up in New Orleans, and it's been, you know, amazing. I got to learn from the likes of, you know, Jonathan Vilma, Roman Harper, Will Smith, rest in peace. When he first came, you know, when I first came into the league, I had, you know, Sean Rogers, Abreu Franklin. I had all these vets, Cedric Ellis, that sort of took me under their wing. It was like, this is how you become a pro. And I don't know about any other franchise. I've never had to worry about it.
Right.
I know when I talk to other guys around the league, it's like, yo, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. I'm like, yo, that's not what the Saints do. This is how we do things. And they're like, man, this sounds like, you know, they show love. You got probably two handfuls worth of teams that, you know, are run really well. From top to bottom, and I'm happy to be a part of that. So I don't have to look outside and be like, oh, I wonder what they're doing over there. I'm just happy being on the green grass over here.
Now, the Benson family's always treated their players and coaches incredibly well. It's Cameron Jordan. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Good luck to you in your bye week. Enjoy it. I know not everything in America is open, but there's a few restaurants open. Have some fun, and thanks for coming on the show.
I appreciate it. I wish I could hit a restaurant. I'm going to stay safe and try and complete this season.
Yeah,
hopefully COVID-free.